Live from Los Angeles, it's the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights. We'll be swimming.
With tonight's guest, Dr. Roxanne Muschietti.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And comedic guest, Kim Castle. I am Mark Legere, and now your host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I am amazed at what I learn from our guests. I really do.
You know, interestingly, I was at a party recently and somebody said, "Would if you had to do it all again, would you do it any differently?" And of course, people usually answer no, but I have learned so much. How could I not use what I learned? I mean, if my brain was taken away, then I guess I would do it exactly the same way, because I like who I am. I love who I am. And I love the people that I'm working with and people that I'm meeting. And I love what I'm learning. And I have learned so much. And what we're going to learn together tonight from these two powerful women that have both been through so much in completely different ways, and what they have done with what they have learned and with their life changes is quite amazing. And they are helping others. And that's one of the most beautiful things I think that one can do. Now, it's interesting that I'm going to read just a little bit here about what I've learned about our guest, Roxanne, for example. Dr. Roxanne Muschietti was born in Northern California in the late 70s. She was the oldest of three and served as a surrogate parent to her younger sister and brother from the time they were born. And due to extensive neglect during her childhood, education was not a priority for her. Homelessness, frequent relocation, and family instability led to failing grades in school. Now, I started reading this. First of all, her last name is Italian, and mine is. I was born in Northern California. I was born before her, but nonetheless within the same decade. And I thought, wait a minute, while I was going through school, there were some girls that maybe weren't dressed well, or maybe looked like they were failing, or and kids used to make fun of them. Now, kids used to make fun of me too. So I was in no position to make fun of anybody else. But one thing that I learned while reading through this and thinking about this is I didn't have the confidence then, but I never thought about actually going up to one of those girls, or boys actually. I remember a boy that would pee himself and everybody just laughed at him, made fun of him, and I never went up to him and said, "Hey, if you need a friend," or "Hey, if I can," you know, I didn't think I had anything to offer because I was being made fun of too. But maybe together we might have been able to help each other, support each other. And had I learned all of this, me who grew up in a home with two parents and in a very loving home, and though we had our issues, at least we had a home and my parents were there, and this is the complete other side, I had tons to offer, tons. And so I've already learned something. I can't wait to learn more. I'm getting goosebumps, actually. And between her and our comedic guest later tonight, it's great that we can say comedic guest because we can laugh about some of this stuff now. But before we laugh, let's really get into the meat of the stories. We'll be right back after this.
True performance takes more than just working out. Every day we demand more from our body. But what does your body demand? Hunger is not your body's call for empty calories. It's your body asking for nutrients it's lacking. It's time to reward your body with Boku Superfood, made from the world's finest organic ingredients, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and essential trace nutrients, all developed naturally and organically from nature's most nutrient-dense foods. Boku Superfood is quite possibly the best thing you can feed your body. So listen to your body. Reward it with pure, raw, beautiful food. Boku Superfood.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network.
You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Marianne Williamson, Gary Anthony Williams, Sharon Stone, and Alex Gray on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com. Or you can visit us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I got a little choked up there at the end.
I did too, and you know what you said is so spot on, and the word that keeps ringing true to me is together. It's such a powerful word, and you know, so often I think everyone has at least a moment, if not a lifetime, of feeling alone or isolated, you know, not supported, not understood, not heard. So you know what you are sharing, especially when you get into people that are maybe not gifted the best hand to play with, you know, the best set of cards, feeling alone. And we don't realize just how much we can offer each other and that whole idea of togetherness and being understood and just feeling like, hey, we're in it together is, I think, such a big, big point that you brought up.
Yeah. You know, let's get right in. Because my heart is about to burst out of the chest because I do want to say something. Let's say this, that I told you a little bit about the early childhood. At the age of 17, Roxanne set out to be the first in her family to attend college and enrolled in a community college. She later not only went on to get her bachelor's degree in psychology, she got her PhD and master's in child education. I think it's the other way around. She got her master's and then her PhD in child and adolescent development. That's amazing at UC Santa Barbara. So now she's a doctor and now she's with us. Welcome, Dr. Roxanne Machete, to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me on the show. It's a real honor to be here. And I love the discussion so far already.
I'm glad you're here. I feel like I want to say something. I feel like I want to say I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I want to say I'm sorry that I didn't see enough who I was to be able to see other people like you. I kind of am thinking about all the high school friends that are now on Facebook, and some I know some of these people were in the same position as you. And for that matter, I needed, you know, as well, but I had to give. So I'm sorry I didn't know how to give back.
I think that's a big thing with a lot of people, myself included. Sometimes with students, I won't be able to tune into the fact that they really need help until the end of the semester, and then I'll realize, oh my gosh, I could have done something differently. So I would say don't be too hard on yourself. It's really sweet to acknowledge that, but it is a thing, and that's kind of why I got into this. That's what gave me that drive to go to school, because I really wanted to help others that were in my situation. Similarly, just kind of like, open people's eyes to the fact that it doesn't take a lot to support someone at all. It takes a friendly smile or, you know, an encouraging suggestion of, have you thought about going to college? Things like that that are so simple that actually help people along the way that might be struggling.
Speaking about have you thought about going to college, how did you think about going to college coming from that?
It's funny because I get asked that a lot. Sometimes I'll talk to my students and they'll ask me the same question. And, oftentimes my response is I was really stubborn, but there was a variety of things that were occurring. The background and the environment that we grew up in was so chaotic, all the way from it being dangerous and scary to it being, you know, just really sad. And waiting in line at a church to get free food in front of your middle school is really embarrassing when you've already been the kid that's made fun of all through the school. So those experiences made me terrified to continue down that path. So there was always this no with all in my mind, there is a different life. I don't know how, I don't know why I knew that, because I was born into it, and all we lived in rundown motels or cars, and all of our friends of my mom's lived in those too. So it's not like we had our grandparents that we went to visit. So I think I got a little bit of exposure to a different life. They had a very nice home and we slept in beds. And so maybe that was that juxtaposition. I was just going to use that word. The juxtaposition of those two lives, being able to see that there is something different, you don't have to live this way, that gave that little bit of drive in me. And then once we were moved from our mom, my sister and brother were kind of always my kids. If you find pictures of me when I was like five, I have one baby on each hip. And they were always my kids. And I think wanting that for myself, I wanted it more for them. And I wanted to show them, as crazy as it might seem, that whatever we wanted, we could have. That was kind of my goal. But I really didn't know what I was doing. It was just blind faith that, like, I'm just going to keep putting one foot in front of the other. I have no clue what I'm doing or if this is actually possible. And I kept, you know, some might say it was luck, synchronicity, who knows. But I applied, you know, when I was in high school, I graduated when I was 17. And some teacher said, "Have you heard of the word resilient? You are a very resilient human. You should think about psychology. You should think about college." And at the time, you know, I'm like, what? I don't know. And I had a counselor who sat with me and filled out the forms, and it was daunting, and I didn't know what I was doing, and everything you feel kind of, it's not intuitive. Get like financial aid papers and things. And my grandparents were encouraging, but they're like, I don't know. So then I went to community college and I was funded. I was in the EOP program, which was equal opportunities program, and like things like that really encouraged me. And so that kept me going. And then I ended up taking guardianship of Olivia and Jagger, my sister and brother. And that was the fuel that led the rest of the way. Because at that point, I couldn't fail. I had to show them that you could do this, even though I didn't know I could. I really didn't.
Well, you knew somewhere inside. You certainly, certainly knew.
So that's kind of long-winded. But that's what gave me the drive to kind of apply and go.
I would like to acknowledge, first of all, this is very special because your sister,
she's here. Yeah,
she's here in the studio with us
today, which is amazing. And we're very supportive of each other.
She drove 2 hours to be here. Well, technically 2 hours, she didn't have any traffic here in Los Angeles, could have been four, but that's very special.
Very special.
And the other thing I wanted to acknowledge just left my brain.
That's okay.
Well, I was going to start to acknowledge the fact that, you know, as a father of one and knowing just how not ready to be a father I was without all of these other things to deal with is, you know, just the beginning of an amazing story as to how you stepped up the way you did within your environment and then own that to pursue, you know, the education, the purpose and really using, you know, your experience is amazing to me.
Kind of learned along the way that a lot of things happen that way. You know, you're not ready for them. I wasn't ready to take legal guardianship of them. I wasn't ready for college. I was not ready for the PhD program when I got into it. Maybe it is fake it until you make it, but you do step up to the plate and everything's terrifying. And sometimes at the time I didn't even know it was terrifying until I sat and looked back and thought about what it really was like to step foot on campus and start that PhD program. I was like, I think the admissions committee made a mistake. I was 100% convinced that they had made a mistake and that I did not belong there.
I can't imagine anybody better that works with children and adolescents.
And you know, so you just kind of step up to the plate and as long as you keep moving forward and your heart is in the right place, and that's the one thing that is undeniable, whether that whole childhood and background sticks with me, and that's something else I tell my students a lot. That hasn't gone away. That's more of my identity, I think, than a PhD. And that's kind of what I was talking to you guys about yesterday, saying like people look at me and they think, oh, it's a white woman.
Yeah, let's hold off on that, actually.
Okay, no problem.
We're going to get on to that.
So I was going to say, getting into the PhD program, it was like a big thing where I wasn't really sure or that I was competent enough. But it was just knowing that my heart was in the right place and I was going for something to help others was what kept me going.
And that intent is clear, and that's what Filippo was alluding to. And you know, I always use the sports analogy because any sports fan knows the difference between the telecaster that's never stepped foot on the field, you know, and the one that's purely, you know, academic versus those that have, you know, have the real experience and have lived with not only the game itself, but, you know, the interaction with the players and the life that goes around it. So it's the same thing. You have so much to draw from that most couldn't even begin to comprehend learning from a book. And so it makes perfect sense, as Filippo was saying, but it's still, it's mind-blowing.
It is mind-blowing. It's also great to see that there was a program that actually did serve somebody who needed serving, and it seems like it served you well enough to help you along the way.
There were a variety of programs, and that's actually what's so cool about my job, because it's come around full circle, and now I am helping develop those programs on our campus and doing research on how effective they are and how we can tweak them and make them better, and so it's really, really cool to be in that seat and to be able to do that and to be able to speak from experience and say, this is what helped me when I felt like I had no clue what was going on. So that's a really, really cool thing.
That's very awesome. Something, especially for the ones who are being helped by you. And so what you started to allude to is that we have titled the show, Don't Judge a Book by Its Color. And so when we come back, we're going to talk with our guest, Dr. Roxanne Machete, about why the show is titled that and what that means in her life when we come back right after this.
Listen to these words. He would not be beat by forces too fierce for man, woman, or beast. As the going got tougher, his courage increased. It's the little story with a big message, a message that speaks to children of all ages. It's about believing in yourself, overcoming obstacles, and never giving up. It's been called a masterpiece, one of the finest children's books ever written, and a true children's classic. Shadow Stevens has been called Dr. Seuss for the 21st century. His big little book, The Big Galoot, is a story about bullying. Bullying has become an American epidemic, and The Big Galoot talks about it in a way that will touch the heart of a child of four and a grandfather of 104. It's the story of a little boy with size 42 hands, the biggest hands anyone has ever seen, and the kids laugh at him. Then the laughter turns mean. They mock him and trip him, and much worse. But throughout it all, Warren Galoot says, I'm a galoot, but I have good luck. You can't get me down. I never give up. A second grader named Chandler said, I thought it was the best funny book I have seen in my life. And we agree. Whoopi Goldberg said, this is a great story. Bravo, Shadow. The Big Galoot is available now as an ebook exclusively on Kindle Fire on Amazon for only $3.98. We strongly urge you to get it for your children, your children's children, or as a gift to yourself. Its message speaks to all of us. Have good luck and never give up. Go to Amazon.com and search for The Big Galoot by Shadow Stevens.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as The Green Children, Dan Millman, Hot Rod Fuller, and Mike Marino on our archive page at LifeChangesNetwork.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. We are talking to our guest, Dr. Roxanne Machete. A little later on, we are going to have our comedic guest, Kim Castle, who has a completely different story, and yet somehow these stories come together. Actually, all of our stories come together in such a way that is a beautiful thing. Want to give your website, Dr. Roxanne. We're going to give your Facebook page a little later because you have a book coming out, and we want people to know about that. And I have a feeling you're going to be busy on speaking engagements, whether you know it or not. And so we'll be talking more about that as well. But why have we decided to call this show Don't Judge a Book by Its Color?
That's a very good question. I love, love, love the title, which was not my idea, by the way, but I love it.
What's your idea now?
It is my idea now. I'm going to steal it or borrow it, lift it. The reason that we title it that way is because as a white woman, I didn't understand this a while back, I would say, when I was a teenager or just starting college. But as a white woman, I realized that people look at me and make a judgment, especially, you know, if I'm dressed nice, and I look put together, people look at me and make assumptions.
By the way, you are dressed very nice. So you look very well put together.
It's all the front.
It's radio audience. So, and she's very beautiful and charming. So please continue.
And blushing. And so I started realizing a couple of things. One thing that happened to me was I mentioned the EOP program. It's called the Equal Opportunities Program. It was at my community college. And I walked into the room for orientation and I was the only white person out of maybe 200 students. And the only thing that I could think is, what in the world? I cannot be the only, because it was it's called the Equal Opportunities Program, but, and I even thought this, that it was for ethnic minorities, racial and ethnic minorities. So I didn't even know I was eligible to apply to it until a counselor said, no, it's for income as well. If you make below a certain income and you're the first person in your family to go to college, you can also apply. Thankfully, she told me that. I went to the orientation and I kept looking around saying, there's no way I am the only poor white person in this entire college. Mm. How is this possible? So that was the first kind of introduction to it. And then there were just comments such as when I was in grad school, I was waiting tables and I had this couple at my table say, oh, you're in grad school. I wish my parents paid for my college so I could go to school. Wow. It was just these weird little, and what they call them at the university is microaggressions, but they're not usually intentional. They're comments made just based on these assumptions that you might have because of someone's racial or ethnic background or any, there's a variety of ways you could go. And I've seen it play out multiple times in my life. I volunteer now at a homeless shelter in Hollywood, and a lot of those kids were not responsive to me at first just because of the way I look, I think.
Well, sure. What would you know?
Exactly.
About their situation.
What in the heck?
Right?
Oh, great. Lady, you think it's cute to volunteer for the homeless. That's really sweet and all. But what do you know about my situation?
Wow.
And it wasn't until they asked me to do a speaking engagement for the kids. And I was saying, I feel more at home here than I do at a university meeting because I don't feel like I am one with my colleagues. I don't feel like I identify with them, but I identify with you. And I shared a little bit of my story. And since then, all of those beliefs and assumptions have been dispelled and they went away. And it's been a fantastic relationship I've developed with these kids. But I just keep learning that. And even in the university, people are like, oh, well, you know, we're trying to diversify our faculty. I can look around the room and we have a lot of work to do. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. So I would like to have people realize that there's classism and there's things that you can't see. Poverty is invisible, and especially if you're white living in poverty, if you make your way out of it, you're not necessarily viewed as someone who's been disadvantaged. Especially just by glancing at you, people are going to assume a lot of things. And so I don't want to run around and say, oh, poor me. I want to run around and say, there's someone maybe sitting right in front of you that needs help, like you were saying. Mm. So don't judge a book by its color. And that's why that title is so fitting. 50% of the kids that I work with in the Hollywood shelter are white.
Really?
But you wouldn't know. Yeah. So it's just both ways. Don't make
poverty
any assumption
is an equal
either way.
Yeah.
You know, like I would like to, yeah. So just kind of like aid people in seeing that is kind of where I was going with that. And that I was just in a workshop and they were saying that there's a perceived incompetence towards the woman that was next to me. She was so amazing and she was black and she was an associate dean. And she was saying there's a perceived incompetence about a black woman. Mm. And I said, that's interesting. I feel it's almost separate. There's a perceived competence looking at me and I don't know what the heck I'm doing.
Wow. So. And it can be just as devastating. I mean, maybe not just as devastating. It's maybe more devastating because the other end is demoralizing, but the pressures on your end, it's not fair either way.
Or they might perceive that I'm doing great and I don't need help when I really do. Mm. You know, I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm a first generation college student. I'm a first time PhD. I'm a assistant professor and I'm just supposed to know everything and have it all together. And you know, every day I don't. And that's what there's a perceived competence that I'm awesome and doing great. And I think that's also too, what I try to tell my students, you know, like not just to acknowledge that maybe not everyone knows exactly what they're doing, but it's just kind of supporting each other back to your original
back to
statement.
Togetherness.
Yeah.
Well, I'm, I, I'm perceiving something, and it might be an assumption, but you're being like really honest.
I am.
And it's really beautiful. Thank you.
Refreshing.
Yes.
And that's why, in fact, now's a good time to mention that your friends call you Roxy. And I'm lucky enough, and we are, of course, now all to call you friend. I'm really glad you're here.
Well, in talking about you, we'd say Dr. Roxy, Dr. Roxy. So here, a couple times, I'd like, and our guest is Dr. Roxanne Machete. And in any event, I almost said Moschetti, which is the Italian pronunciation. And you had a funny story about that on yes. a lighter note.
You said, oh, I almost mispronounced your name, Moschetti. You say Machete. And I said, oh, well, actually, no, I'm mispronouncing it myself. My entire life, I had gone by Roxanne Venus Machete.
Right. And the Venus is a whole other thing.
Venus is a whole other story. But the Machete was my name. And everyone would say, like a knife. Yes, like a knife. And then I went to Italy and I was checking into a hostel. This old Italian woman started yelling at me, why do you say your own name, your own last name wrong? I'm like, what? She says, it's Moschetti. I'll never forget it. And I came home and I asked my grandfather, who was 100% Italian, Grandpa, this lady tried telling me that I was saying my own last name wrong. And he's like, oh, no, that is how we're supposed to say our name. But everyone just botched it, so we changed it a long time ago. We just stopped calling it that.
So instead of like a knife, fraud. It's more like something that you like can eat and is delicious. So big difference. But speaking of your grandparents, you said when you would visit, they lived in a nice house. And so I begs the question, I mean, I don't want to make anybody wrong here, but what about living there? Or what about?
That's where we went to live, actually.
Eventually.
When we left, yes. Okay. And that's a great question. And that's actually part of my book is the story about everyone has a story. And like you said, all of us come from such a different background. And they were working class, but a stable home, you know, and when I say stable, I mean like they had beds in the rooms, like things that I've never experienced,
right.
But there was also a lot of different type of chaos going on there. And they did the absolute best that they could. But they had literally just retired and moved to a ranch in the middle of nowhere, kind of when we all three came into the picture. And so, and they always said, we wish we would have taken you away sooner or helped sooner. But they also didn't, like, you know, they knew my mom loved us very much and they didn't want to take us from her. So there's, and that's just, I work with kids and families today, and the overall arching goal usually is to leave children intact with their families, to try to stabilize them, which is very hard. But so that's what they were trying to do. But eventually we did move with them. That's where we left.
And your mother now?
She is alive and well. She just actually went through a very, very big health scare where we almost did not, no longer had her. She's living in Red Bluff too, where my brother is. So yeah. She's around and very supportive and very, very proud of us.
I'm glad to hear that.
Roxy, you talk about this story so freely, and I know we've discussed how you've embraced it and you've made a point to be good with it so that you can do what you do and teach and share. Have you found that it has opened doors, open hearts, and have you had experiences with your kids or the kids that you volunteer for where you've seen them open up to you more as a result of you being out there in the way that you are? Have you found your story to be, you know, I just think of other people who are going through things, and suddenly when they find out someone's there, like you were saying at the beginning a little bit about how when you spoke to them, right, when you did your speaking engagement, is that something that happens at the university as well? Do you see people kind of come out from the social system of its university and say, wow, you know what, I've been through some stuff as well?
Yeah, it's actually quite incredible what's transpired at the university. There's like a funny joke in the department that like there's always a line of students at my door during office hours. And so I spoke about this a little bit with you guys yesterday, but when I first started teaching, I was very, very careful with what I disclosed.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is that delicate balance of disclosing things about your story, but not making people uncomfortable. And so I was really careful with it. And it was more, the more comfortable I got with teaching and the more comfortable that I became at what would be appropriate to share, the more students came to me. And I didn't even realize what was occurring at the time, but I had students who would come to me, you know, and sit in my office, and they'd look really nervous, and then they'd start saying, you know, something's going on at home, and this is happening, and this is happening, and I don't know what to do. And I wouldn't know what to do either. And I'd have to very much carefully make sure that they were clear that I wasn't a counselor, so I wasn't giving them advice, but I would look with them for resources that could help their family, because I wouldn't be anywhere without finding resources. It's not, I don't have the answers for sure, and I wouldn't be where I am today or even able to speak about my life without counseling and meditation and therapy groups and so much help. And so that's what I've done with these students. I've sat with them, and then later they came to me and said, thank you so much. I never told anyone about this my entire life. This was going on this long, and I didn't tell my best friend, my boyfriend of 10 years. And at that point, that's when I realized there is something that I'm exhibiting or showing them where they feel safe, that they think, okay, I can go to her. She's there. She's going to listen. She's not going to judge. And if she doesn't have the answers, she's going to, you know, help, hopefully do it together.
That definitely comes out. That just surrounds you. I mean, I got that when I first connected with you, and I felt connected with you totally. And how appropriately that now your current research focuses on the impact of social networks on underrepresented, impoverished college student experiences. So when we come back, we want to know a little bit about that. And you can find out more about Roxy. Actually, follow her. Have fun with her on Facebook. You've got your page up. So it's at facebook.com/Dr. Roxanne Venus Machete. I have to spell that for them. Venus, for those who don't know how to spell Venus, V-E-N-U-S. And Machete is M-O-S-C-H-E-T-T-I. We'll be right back right after this.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Mariel Hemingway, Shadow Stevens, Gary Zukav, and Kyle Cease, on our website at lifechangesshow.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and at Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
What a show we're having right now. It is just blowing my mind, talking with Dr. Roxanne Machete and in just a little bit, our comedic guest, Kim Castle, and her story and her experiences and what they've both done with it. I'm pretty proud of us, all of us, but I'm very, very proud of you, Roxy, if I may. So with that, your research, like, you haven't stopped, and I have a feeling like there's all kinds of stuff in the near future that's big and wonderful for you and the world because of you. Your current research focuses on the impact of social networks on underrepresented, impoverished college student experiences. What does that mean? What did I just say?
So social networks are exactly what we were talking about earlier. It could be friends. There's that funny saying, it's not what you know, it's who you know. It was just as I was speaking earlier, that EOP program, that counselor, that that high school teacher that I mentioned to you guys said you should think about college, those are the social networks. And so what I'm trying to do is kind of research or shed light on how beneficial those are so we don't discredit them. And so we're able to get funding to build programs that build that for students once they get to college. So, because we have a lot of students who have all these aspirations. They apply, they get in, and then they lose steam because their families haven't been to college, their friends aren't going to college maybe from high school. So if we have these networks where we're, you know, buffering and where we are the people that are saying, take these classes or don't lose faith if you this financial aid form is hard to do or whatever. So pre-mentoring programs on campus, things like that. So I'm just, what this research does is it looks at the effectiveness of all these programs. Are our pre-mentors doing what they should be doing? This is what was really helpful. And so it aids in kind of modifying those programs and making them better so they help. So that's kind of, yeah, a good excitement.
You're just making all these things better.
Right.
And now I'm going to make this better. I'm going to make this better. All the things you needed when you were a child.
Exactly. I'm trying to make it.
So your book, now see, the funny thing is that the original title of your book was going to be Craving Chaos. And now I think you're taking, are you?
Don't judge a book by its color. I'm a baby. All right. My book title has changed about 85 times.
So what does it mean? Craving Chaos? Who craves chaos?
So since I can remember, probably that high school teacher, and since then, people have said, you have to write a book. The things, I mean, just, you know, in the whatever time we've spent together today, the things that I've disclosed, when you start getting into the actual stories of things that happen, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, and sure, because there were many days in there, days and nights.
I mean, we counted, and I think we lived in 74 places before we were taken away. Like, so
wow. It's
just, and I, you know, I've thought about calling it 100 houses. I don't really know the title yet because, and so people kept telling me, you have to write a book. You have, there's so many crazy, crazy stories. And
do you want to relive all that, though?
That's a good question, but I think, I mean, in when I tell these stories, they really are unbelievable. And the reason that I would like to tell this story is because I think people don't believe that things like this happen to, I don't know. They don't think that this stuff really happens. I think it's unbelievable. It's kind of like similar books. I think maybe one came out called The Glass Castle, and I had friends read it and they said, oh my God, have you read this book? It's very similar to your background. And it was kind of, but not. And I remember reading it thinking, this shed light on this. And I think what it is, I do want to tell our story because it is a story of, you know, a mother who was not mentally stable and she just had children with different fathers. She was very, very poor. She couldn't get on her feet. What do people do when they have mental instability and they can't get help? Usually they turn to substances.
This is not uncommon.
Not uncommon. And it's just a, you know, it's a story of the chaos that ensued because of these things happening. And I think it is important to tell. Do I want to relive it? Not necessarily. And I think that's actually what stopped me from writing the book 10 years ago because I write and write and write and it takes you to these places.
Yes.
And any kind of artist or author or writer,
yes,
you have to
you live
go
it comes back again.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I've been, you know, busy doing PhD stuff and now I'm a tenure track professor. And even when I go to, you know, conferences and such, I've had people say, don't write this book until you get tenure. You need to focus on one thing. Cause if you're spread all out, it looks like you're scattered. Mm. So there's a variety of different things. I've always been, you know, great at multitasking and
right. Pulling
off a million things. So that's kind of what I think.
And then you have to
down.
Write the movie, you know.
Yeah.
Right, so.
then the movie, I'm not writing the movie. I'm going to hire someone. But so then I got into where I am right now in my life. I realized that originally I was going to call it Embrace the Chaos. It was going to be about embracing how crazy life can be and moving forward. And, you know, but then I didn't want that message of anyone can do this. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps and everything's awesome now, because it's not awesome. On a daily basis, I might wake up and in my mind and in my reality, I am that homeless little kid that is not smart enough and I have nothing for the world. That's my reality that day. I don't know why. And I've got this adult me saying, Roxanne, you're a doctor, go to work, you're fine. Mm-hmm. And so then I realized, you know, I'm still a evolving person, growing and learning. And without the, and I still have got things that I'm learning to calm myself because of that chaos. So then I'm like, wow, I'm kind of craving the chaos. Like, I, even when my life is normal and okay, I wake up and I'm like, no, something's wrong. Like, I'm not.
Because it was such a part of it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, what is that?
It's a part of it, but it's also, I think what you're talking about is so huge, and it's a resounding theme with us at Life Changes, because there's this disconnect between the child that we all are and this adult that we were told to become. And most people are live in a separated place.
Mm-hmm.
That was then, this is now, forget about that. And they don't live in an awareness where they even wrestle with that on a day-to-day basis. So you're staying present in a unique way, and yet then being able to own that story, go to work, get it done. And I think this is why the work that you're doing is so important, to be able to help others bridge that gap. Because the only way you can heal that wounded child with whatever story is to address it in the present. It's not two separate people. We're all, you know, it's us. It's you. It's me. It's, you know.
Yeah, and it's learning how to, like you just said, like merge them or like be their best friend. I don't know. It's really hard to like explain to people. But yeah, there's that craving chaos. And it's like, because it was such a chaotic environment, when things are normal, I still like, something. I don't know. It always feels like something. So,
well,
yeah.
If you ever need a chaotic environment... well, no, you don't know what I'm going to say. What are you
just looking at? This is already going to be good. I know it.
No, I was going to say, why don't you try DJing or something? Go to a festival.
I didn't know what you were going
to
say.
Go to a festival and DJ or something.
And that, too, is why I think I was you know, that whole humility thing and transparency and being really honest, I do crave a level of chaos where it's like, it's summer break and I have a million things to do and I'm trying to write this book, but I think I should, you know, try to go to a new festival.
Oh, I was right.
Yeah.
Okay,
totally.
So, all right. So who knows where that comes from, but you do DJ.
I do DJ, and I wouldn't have even, like... If you would have asked me, oh, you were a DJ, I probably would say, no, what?
No, you did that actually when I asked you yesterday.
I did say that. I'm like, wait, what? What about music? Your guest? No. Well, yeah. And it's something that I've also learned along the way, that because I was so on this track of success and schooling and running, that I didn't make time for balance in my life for a long time. And it was, thankfully, a long time ago in grad school, I had a boyfriend and a roommate that were both guys, and they DJed. And they were like, Roxy, you should try it. You'd be good at it. And so during my breaks from my dissertation typing furiously, I would go in there and I would practice DJing, and I loved it. This was probably in 2003. And then, but I am my own worst enemy in that, because I don't make time for it, you know, so recently, probably in the last 2 or 3 years, I've been making a little bit more time for it. And I have some very encouraging friends that have just pushed me, because I won't do it myself. I'm just too busy with a million other things. And they're like, Roxy, we've booked you. You're doing this set at this point, and I've actually been having a lot of fun with it.
I've heard some of your sets.
They're also being somewhat selfish, because to witness you in action and enjoy that dance is... It's well worth the encouragement.
Mark's been actually at some of my sets.
I have.
And I've heard some of your sets, enjoyed it, and now I got to see you do it. So next.
You can find me on SoundCloud. It's SoundCloud Roxy Venus.
Well, there it is.
So there's some
for someone
there.
Who doesn't do that, I'm on SoundCloud.
I just started it. I was on SoundCloud because I love music, but then someone's like, you need to put your own mixes up there.
That's probably where I heard it. Where was it again?
The first one is from a set that I played at Burning Man at Music Savages
nice.
A while back. And then the most recent one I played at Lightning in a Bottle, this like 2 weeks ago.
Like just 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Okay, and where do we find it?
That one has not been released yet, but when it is, you will find it at SoundCloud.
What's
Roxy
the address?
Roxy Venus. So
okay,
it's
Roxy Venus.
R-O-X-Y-V-E-N-U-S, which is my middle name. I don't know.
Yes, I know. The planet. We were talking about that during the break, actually. And give your Facebook page again. Facebook.com/
Dr. Roxanne, R-O-X-A-N-N-E, Venus, V-E-N-U-S, Moschetti, or Moschetti. But spelling is Moschetti.
You'll answer to either one.
Yes.
Well,
you know, for someone who has had a limited view of herself, I don't know how many people have the various titles of doctor, author, DJ, speaker, and everything else, volunteer, healer because of what you're doing with the kids, as well as teacher, professor. You're amazing, and I hope you continue to disown that limited view and you know, achieve this guy's limit.
And yes, own your unlimited self.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for what you shared here and what we got to experience because of you.
Thanks for having me.
This has been beautiful. Awesome. Thank you, Dr. Roxanne Machete. And when we come back, well, you'll be back. But when we come back, we'll want to hear about the book and the movie and the speaking engagement. When we come back in just a minute, we'll have Kim Castle on and what a story she has. And we'll tell you more about her when we come back in just a moment.
The Life Changes Show is a premier radio show presented by the Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, corporate giants, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show, LifeChangesNetwork.com, and through guest appearances on other inspiring shows and events. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching, a private consultation with one of us, corporate or live event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, please email us at info@LifeChangesNetwork.com.
Okay. We are back, and life changes. My mind has just been blown here. Now, I met Kim, actually, our guest, Kim Castle, our comedic guest, years ago, just like, I don't know, 30 seconds. We'll have her tell that story because I didn't even remember. I'm glad she did. And I was going to share with you what I have written here and what I know of her. And she just blew my mind with something entirely different. So let's start with the part that I can read. Kim Castle, I'm just like, wow, Kim Castle, she's the star of Kim TV and the upcoming series Aging Ungracefully. Yeah, she's a fresh voice for feminine leadership. I'll vouch for that. After running herself into the ground, striving tirelessly for success, she recovered from exhaustion, depression, and stress-related illness naturally through diet and life changes, probably friend changes too, but lifestyle changes. With humor, insight, and vulnerability, she helps busy women discover a better way to live with her recipes, like food recipes, actually, and shortcuts to feeling great again at any age. I should say, she's also a stand-up comedian, a TV host, a writer, an award-winning art director. Welcome, Kim, to the show.
Thank you. It's a joy to be here.
It's a joy to have you. Now, what, you know, but before we get into anything we were going to talk about, what did you say when you walked in the studio just now?
I had the same experience as Dr. Roxy.
Get out.
Yeah. Like, only. Yeah, I grew up homeless. Mom was on drugs. Completely unprepared.
And you're white?
And I'm white.
Yeah.
In case you couldn't tell.
No, I'm not making a joke about that.
No,
I'm being
white,
very serious.
Absolutely. And my mom had me when she was 17, unwed, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh,
I came out premature 2 months. I was sick all the time, terrible asthma. I was allergic to life because I had no developed immune system, and became the mom at a very early age. And I was my mom's mom and my brother and sister's mom. And at an early age, around 8 years old, I just made it to seven. I decided that I didn't want to be sick anymore, and I became an athlete and a synchronized swimmer. And a year later, I cured myself of asthma, and I was in the Junior Olympics by holding my breath. Talk about resilience. I learned, like, to push my body past limits and put myself through college and got out of poverty, the only person in my family to ever have gone to college and got out of poverty. And so instead of becoming a doctor, I became a performer and a comedian and an art director to make the world the world that I didn't see externally beautiful, but I knew could be beautiful and light and filled with laughter.
How do you make this funny?
Well, the opposite is more painful, you know, to feel, you know, oh, woe is me, and to feel like everybody else has it better. I mean, I remember my first job, probably 15, I started working at a Wendy's, and I lived in a poor area of Miami, but was right next to a very wealthy area. So I would work in the drive-through of a Wendy's, and my friends from school had these cars, and it's like I had to take 3 buses to get to work. And it was at that time that I started, like, I could feel myself going to the dark side and feeling bitter, and then I would this sense of humor would come through, and it was the only way that I could not go crazy. So I would find a way to make jokes. My mom would bring a car home that she found that was actually painted with house paint. There was brush marks on it and paintbrush. I just would make jokes about it. Like, you know, too painful to drive up in it, so let me make a joke about it.
You know, the way your hands are going and your face is going, you make me want to laugh, and I don't want to laugh. I want to say I'm sorry to you too.
No, I don't accept that.
Good for you.
There's no need to be sorry. No, it's
seriously
gonna be a great canvas to which to inspire. I became a motivational speaker, comedian. Yeah, there's no sorry. That's not life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can see Dorothy beaming outside because that's her advice when moments come along, and the moments pale in comparison most often to what both of you have been through. And she always says, laugh it off.
So we met recently, and you were reminding me about the first time we actually met, and that was like coincidence, quote unquote. Like, what you remember something that I don't.
Yeah, no, I was getting ready to inspire an audience.
A huge audience,
yeah,
I remember.
And you just, it was so sweet. I was gonna, in my pregame, you know, connecting to spirit, you know, making
sure. And I interrupted you?
Yeah.
That's actually quite common.
It's all about people.
Oh, wow.
No, you were really sweet. You saw me in my prep and my pregame, you know, wind up. And you just said something really, so I can't remember exactly what you said, but you just said something that was so, you see me. You know, it was a very moment. Wow. It was a very wonderful moment that I was able to. What was interesting, when I was a comic doing the clubs, you know, I was really clever and had a really great opening joke that I knew every single time would kill. But because I was conditioned in chaos and, you know, life that was hard, you get conditioned to making things harder. Like, all right. You know, you do it for yourself. So I had made a rule that no matter what, my first joke had to come from the room.
Interesting. And
it kept me connected to, like, the environment.
Wow.
It was a galvanizing moment.
It grounded you.
And everybody. It brought us all to that moment. And what was great was you, that moment that you gave me, literally right before they called my name, that was part of the energy that I took to the stage.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, no, wow. I there would be plenty of times that I didn't know my joke before. I was like, Kim Castle. Where's my joke?
Oh, no. That's how I am with the monologues, but I'll never admit to that.
But there's a downside that I have to say from the ability to overcome and be resilient. I mean, that's my middle name. That it could backfire, and it did for me. You know, that thing that saved you could also, if you don't let, you know, like the shuttle, if it doesn't let go of certain parts, it'll just burn up.
Yeah.
That's what happened to me.
Yeah, as I'm looking at here, some of the things that, I mean, depression, exhaustion, and this is real stuff. This is not, you know, talk about don't judge a book by its color. This is not, oh, those white people, quote unquote, you know, they have.
Oh, she's so pretty. She's so funny.
Right. What could she be depressed about? Right. What could she be exhausted about? Okay, so you have to tell one more joke today, right? So what was going on with you? Because this is really real.
Oh, it was really real. I mean, I think a whole life of feeling like you're having to lift the world around you. And because I had the power.
Literally a whole life.
Oh, literally my
from
entire
your child.
Life.
Yeah.
Lifting everyone around me. That was the memo that I got. And to a point where, as a speaker, I could walk into a room of 1,000 people and got them message that I was supposed to lift the entire audience.
By yourself.
that's, yeah. I got it. Might as well use it.
Yeah.
And I did get to a point where, as a classic type A perfectionist, you know, obsessive perfectionist, I just ran myself to the ground. I basically borrowed fuel from the future, my adrenals, my hormones, everything, to race to this place of healing humanity and getting to success. And I think a lot of type A women, especially if they have athleticism in their background, you know, that drive, you don't know how to turn it off until, you know, one day I was literally, like, I was clinically depressed, but I never would show it because I could put on jazz hands. I would literally think about how I could kill myself. And believe it or not, holding my breath.
Did you find that sense of purpose that you were chasing too, and that was driving you, was also almost like self-medication, like a distraction from that upliftment?
No, I didn't. It just felt like I didn't have it. Almost like I was a disappointment to God. Like I didn't have any more.
Wow.
Like, okay, I'm helping everybody. I think I'm trying. I'm doing what I thought I was supposed to do, but I don't have it in me
to give
anymore.
This is the adrenal burnout.
Yeah, literally.
Along with everything else.
Burnout.
Adrenal burnout.
And women were not biologically designed to keep going on track. We are physically not designed to work that way. So we start robbing from our adrenals, and your immune system gets compromised. So my hormones got upside down. My thyroid stopped working. And I still didn't know anything was wrong. I'm just making the world happy, saving people. And I over-exercised. That was my medication. Like, I'm an over-exerciser. You know, I didn't have drugs or anything. Like, saw how stupid my mom looked doing drugs. So I didn't do that. I went to exercise. And it's still just as deadly, you know, in terms of the, you know, I take one spinning class when three are available.
Wow.
You know, I taught aerobics. I would teach three in a row, you know, like that kind of thing. And I didn't think anything was wrong until I kept passing out in the car. I'd go take a Pilates class. I'd get in the car with the keys still in my hand, and I'll say, I'll just sit here a moment. And I'd fall asleep and pass out. And like 45 minutes wait, I'd wake up and go, what happened? Where am I? Oh, okay. And just keep going.
Now, see, that's not funny. I know that's not funny. It's just not. Mm-mm. Wow. Mm-mm. Scary. That's what that is.
Yeah. And, you know, to a point where I thought, you know, I didn't have anything left to offer the world.
Okay. So adrenal burnout, chronic fatigue. I mean, the list sounds
we kept going. Thyroid stopped working. Hormones, you know, all the hormones were upside down. No serotonin. Serotonin is your happy juice. So I could put on the happy, but I didn't have it internally. Literally, it was chemically not there anymore.
How did you bring yourself
to balance? Yeah, exactly. Especially a type A personality who's like, I got to do it right. What do you do?
Well, I walked away from a very successful business as a motivational speaker and a, you know, an expert where, you know, I get paid $1,500 an hour to talk to me. Walked away from my own business, and I was considering going to a Buddhist temple, suicide, or starting a YouTube show.
I've seen the YouTube show, so I think that's gosh.
So you know what I did?
I love it, actually.
I decided that I can't be the only person, a woman, who overdid and who didn't take care of herself and put everything else as more important. And I thought, I'm going to share the journey of recovery. That's why we filmed the show, the series. It's a docu-comedy called Aging Ungracefully. And you go on the journey of finding out what's wrong with me with the doctor. It's kind of like a cross between the it's a documentary, Crazy Sexy Cancer meets Curb Your Enthusiasm. So you find all the backstory, and you kind of go on the journey of finding out what drives a type A woman and the typical type A diseases that women get when they do that and they don't take care of themselves.
Now, are you funny when you go to the doctor?
Yeah. Well, you know, it was interesting. There was one
episode. I'm sorry to keep.
I can't help it. I'm wired as a performer. I'm wired to pay no attention to the blood coming out of my arm. You know, I can't help it. And I remember this one episode where we filmed, and I'm like, and I'm like crying on camera going, I don't know what I should do here. Am I the performer or am I the patient? Like, I literally didn't know how to be just the patient, because I still felt my role was to entertain the camera people, entertain the doctor, you know, everybody, entertain the phlebotomist, like wired to entertain.
So what you were, your job was to be the patient. That was the role.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And to heal.
Oh yeah. Sorry.
No, not sorry. Course. Stop doing that. Okay.
Sorry, I won't do it anymore.
No, but it was it was a really interesting experience. So, you know, to go and through the process, like, you know, the pieces of me came back together, realized that that was also what was making me sick, taking responsibility for making myself sick, and not in a Louise Hay, you know, heal yourself, but literally what made me
we
sick.
We like Louise Hay.
No, I like her too. Okay. It's just
are
like,
you sorry again?
Yeah, no, I'm not sorry. I
it's
like
it's just her. So, you know, like, okay, anger is in your liver, or, you know, like that. It's so, sometimes it's hard for, it's how many people are in touch with their liver. So it kind of makes it a little removed, kind of thing. But when you really take a physical responsibility for making yourself sick, not in some kind of philosophy that somebody else came up with, but that you really go, oh my God, I did that.
Mm.
It's only from that place that you can do something else about it.
I am my own worst enemy.
Mm-hmm. And you asked about what the biggest recovery was. I had to change how I thought. I had to really get in touch with my body, something I had beat up my entire life. I had to really come to terms with food.
What actually, you know, getting in touch with your body, quote unquote, you thought you were in touch.
I thought I was.
With,
I was healthy, right? In theory.
Yeah. You look great. Right. And yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She just did a muscle for me. Right. So, but how do we get from the in theory part to where you are now without having to go through what you did?
Sure.
Right.
Well, the first thing is to realize that your well-being is number one, besides before your PhD, before your family, before anything.
Hmm.
So before all the before saving humanity. So I had to rewire my brain that the first thing I woke up in the morning was to ask my body, what do you need? Literally, I would say it out loud. My husband would say, what do I need? No, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking to me.
It's about me.
I had to say it out loud. I had to get in touch with putting my well-being first.
It's the old put the oxygen on first, mm-hmm. then you can help those around you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I really had to do that. And then I had to get in touch with happiness and realizing that happiness wasn't connected to my accomplishments. My worth wasn't connected to how much I did. I actually had to shortcut that. I mean, we're working so hard to get there, to get happy. Well, why not just shortcut? You don't have to pass go.
You know, be happy.
I just really got to happiness without, and everything else is extra. Now I can really make people laugh and lift them up without it sacrificing my energy. It just comes off me like exhaust, as opposed to pumping me up.
And speaking of happy, Roxy's still in here with us, and
yes.
I'm sensing she wants to say
something. Oh, no, I've been wanting to say something, just, but I didn't want to interrupt you. I 100% believe we were on this show together for a reason. I feel like I'm staring at me down the road. I am without, because that's not something that you want to talk about, where I'm at. I'm at the point where I'm still falling asleep in the car with the keys in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where that crossroads happening with me. It's a big transition where I'm starting to realize, yes, it's admirable to save the world and I'm doing all this stuff, but I am exhausted.
Absolutely. And that's
and
why
I'm
I do
so
what
thankful
I do.
That I was on this show. So now if I'm going to have to.
If I can prevent you and women like you and women like us from going there, I really feel like, I know it sounds weird, but I'm healing the world by healing women.
Doesn't sound weird.
Well, yeah,
at all.
That's
weird.
And that, I've gone there. Like, I am there, and so it's so. I'm sitting here like, I cannot believe that this happened. This woman is now going to have a super fan following her around because I am at that crossroads where I've had doctors tell me you need to stop. I have a ton of medical problems.
Let me give you a preview
fatigue,
of what
a
it's
million
like.
Things,
it is
and it's
not
good.
It's not an easy journey. It took me a full year to get out of the hole, and the doctors said I had depleted myself so bad that be prepared not to get my serotonin back, that I would have to be on bioidenticals for the rest of my life. I was taking cortisol. I used it all up. I'm glad to say that I'm 100% back. I've got a strong will, too.
She's not only back, she's got kimcastle.tv, Kim, K-I-M, Castle, C-A-S-T-L-E.tv. Now, speaking of TV, you're always having these meetings with this big network. Mm-hmm. And so that, I'm assuming, is about aging ungracefully, right?
No.
Oh, it's not?
No.
Oh, that's a whole something other else.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're pitching lifestyle shows.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting.
So you're still on the go.
It was an interesting, how many people recover from adrenal burnout and chronic fatigue and hypothyroidism and launch three shows at the same time to do it. And it was interesting to kind of find balance in the same behavior, to go, okay, what do I do? And I constantly was like split personality, like finding my old behavior to drive, 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 create, 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 and going, okay, there's a different way to do it. And I do believe that women getting to success can get there in a completely different way. We don't have to burn out. There's just not a model in our culture that supports women to be in their real power. And to get things done from their real power.
Sure, there is.
About this transition.
It's called Kim Castle and Dr. Roxanne.
You're doing it through university. I do it through entertainment. I feel that if I can let people laugh at me, laugh at my behavior, identify, and then point to resources and say, hey, I'm just a few steps ahead. This is what I did. I can get to people that much more. I was an expert for a decade. We've passed that point. We don't need experts. We need real.
Wow.
I do it that way.
That's a great.
Yep.
Great statement. Yeah. And so now you can add craving balanced chaos to your list.
That's it. I wasn't writing it as I was encouraging it. I'm writing as I'm really struggling with it.
Yeah.
I'm really struggling with needing to find calm amongst the chaos because I will die.
Yoga.
No.
I will not. It's not sustainable.
And Kim, thank you for being here because obviously, I mean, I was feeling this when we talked about it, whenever that was, and I said, I feel like you're supposed to be at this show. And obviously, more people are needing to connect here with what the message is coming through. So kimcastle.tv. Now, recently at a party, there were all these people raving about your cooking. And so this life you're describing, I'm picturing, you sticking a power bar in your mouth and all that stuff. And yet people are raving about your cooking. So please explain.
Yeah. Up until about 5 years ago, I did not acknowledge food. I didn't even think, it was something you had to do, like sleep. Oh God, I have to go to sleep again. And about 5 years ago, I had an awakening. I was in that movie, Julia and Julie. I think it was Julie and Julia. Do you remember that? Meryl Streep played Julia Childs. And I'm watching this movie. And at the end of the movie, I'm sobbing, like shoulder bobbing, sobbing. And I'm looking around going, does anybody else, anybody else crying? And I went, nobody else is crying. And this is a comedy. And I went, oh my God, something about food. And I came home and I walking down my hall and I saw a bookshelf with all these recipes and books and tears from magazines. And I literally said out loud, who put that there? Because I, up until that point, never even acknowledged food.
So you didn't cook or?
Never. Never.
Did you eat nice food?
No. No, it wasn't.
She said with certainty.
So seriously, you were a power bar kind of girl.
I was like, give me a bar, a pill, or a shake. I've got things to do. And about 5 years ago, I had this awakening of going, oh my God, I think there's something here to food. And I fortunately never had an eating issue or so. I had a control issue.
Wait a minute, you had an eating issue.
I didn't have one that you could label.
Well, we need a label then.
I was a control freak. So to me, not eating was, I could control, living in chaos. You find the thing you can control. And so I became a born-again foodie. And I discovered this sense of, I remember putting certain things in my mouth in the beginning going, oh my God, I think there's burgundy mustard. And I didn't even know there was such a thing as burgundy mustard. It just opened it up in me. And I realized this real profound sense of connection between healthy in our body means healthy food. And the quality of the food we eat 100% dictates the quality of our life. So I really got into gluten-free, sugar-free, and really that connection between food can be sensual and sexy and just this, oh my God, I gotta have it, and still be amazing. Like there'd be elements to my food that I'll put like Brazil nuts and people go, oh my God, this tastes like Parmesan. And it's like, no, it's Brazil nuts. And that has glutathione, and the glutathione is anti-aging. I'll find ingredients to put in the food that goes beyond like just the taste buds. It actually serves the body. And I actually have a cookbook coming out soon called Desserts Kimplified, and it's all gluten-free, sugar-free desserts, and each recipe comes with a video of me making it.
You're not making the Spam and Twinkie people happy.
No, sorry. But if they came to me, I could help them make them better.
She can help you. And where can they – is the cookbook going to be at kimcastle.tv?
No, the cookbook you can get at kimcastle.com.
Oh, there's a kimcastle.com. I've missed this.
That's okay.
There's a whole other world you just opened up for me. Yeah. Totally blew my mind at the beginning of the show. What can we leave – this has been such an important show, period, and an important show for women and about women and saving. So what can we leave? What else? I mean, what else? What else can we leave women with?
I would like to leave that you are more than what you do, that you have a profound role just by being alive, and that your number one — the number one thing that you are to do on this planet is to be happy. The world looks to you for a state of rightness, and most people don't even realize that, that people look to women for a state of equilibrium, balance, rightness in the world. Mm. And that as women, especially as type A women, we don't realize we're rocking the boat, we're the water, we're the everything. So that not only, it's hard to imagine, but by taking care of yourself and really getting right and balanced and happy, you're actually helping the world.
Wow. Put a crown on that castle. KimCastle.tv. Thank you so much for your honesty and your beauty and your sharing here completely yourself. And wow, you're on to something. And you're on to something.
We're all on to something.
Just don't rock
we're
the
on
boat.
It together.
Just don't rock the boat.
And don't eat gluten. Stay away from gluten.
And even the sugar stuff. Yeah.
There's so many better ways. Date sugar, amazing. Coconut sugar, amazing. Yacon syrup, so much healthier for you.
I wish people could see your face every time you're mentioning all this stuff. And the burgundy mustard? Who's ever heard of that? It's like, okay, if you know there's a burgundy mustard, you must. I have to eat something to make because it's got to be delicious.
We're back to it's all about Filippo.
You know? I'm sorry. This has been so not about me. But I'm glad, however, I am got to meet you, Kim, and got you here. So this is been beautiful. KimCastle.com and KimCastle.tv.
And Facebook is Kim Castle. Pinterest, Kim Castle.
Oh, so Kim Castle. Kim Castle, Kim Castle.
Hey, I got a good name. Might as well use it.
Got a great name. Well, with that, thank you, Kim Castle. Thank you, Dr. Roxanne Venus Moschetti Machete. And on behalf of our engineer, Don Newsom at BBS Radio, and our engineer here at Studio NoHo, Brent Hahn, our executive producer, Dorothy Donahue, and our my co-host, Mark Leger, and myself, Filippo Voltaggio, we're here to remind you that as your life changes, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, Life Changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.